Football! America's live and underway here on ESPN+. Plus. In the aftermath, as you just saw, of El Clásico Nacional down in Liga MX, Herc, it was a good weekend for fans of Club America. Was it a good weekend for you?
It was a good weekend for me. It was fight week for me. It was Campeones Cup fight week, obviously, New York City versus Atlas. And then I went to Las Vegas for Canelo versus Triple G. But I saw somebody from the soccer world there. I saw a few people, actually.
Oh, okay. Maybe we'll get into that later in the show. Before we move on, what exactly are you wearing? Because it feels like a fresh kid day here on Football America.
So, true story. I think when I ordered this beauty, they were still in the Serie A. It just got in town. Literally got in town when I was away, and I was like, oh, I forgot I ordered that. So thanks to the good people of Venezia.
All right. I don't have any good people at Venezia, but my friends bring me jerseys when they go to Europe. Shout out to my boy Jose. Went to Sevilla, brought me this. It's the new Sevilla. Can I get all the way around? You see there? Tecatito.
There you go.
Hopefully
it brings that man some luck.
Yes, yes. Maybe a miracle recovery ahead of the World Cup. Speaking of, lots to come in this show. Juan Carlos Osorio is going to join us, the former Mexican national team manager, to discuss El Tri's most pressing issue, the number nine position. We also had, Herc, a decisive weekend across Major League Soccer. Three teams seeing their playoff hopes evaporate. Two of them, Herc, among your many former employers. And in the National Women's Soccer League, we had a record-setting crowd in San Diego as the California expansion wars continue between Angel City and Wave Football Club. But we start, Herc, with Americans abroad, specifically a man who has been tearing it up of late, Jordan Pefok. Another big weekend for the American striker and his team, Union Berlin. They were hosting Wolfsburg on Sunday. Pefok in the starting lineup and on the score sheet, Herc, giving Union the 1-0 lead there in the 54th minute. Pretty good finish.
That's about as good as a finish as you're going to see from that angle. Ridiculous finish. Great run, great awareness, anticipation. A diving-esque flipped-on header, if you will. It's a golazo.
Yep, his third Bundesliga goal of the season to go along with three assists. Union Berlin, they went on to win 2-0. Now top of the Bundesliga and clearly feeling themselves on Twitter, reminding the U.S. men's national team Twitter account that both Union Berlin and Jordan Pefok still exist and are still scoring. So Herc, Pefok with another goal. But of course, as we know, he was left off the latest U.S. roster that has a lot of fans worried about the idea that he could miss out on Qatar. What do you think? Should U.S. fans be worried about Pefok missing out, or is his ticket still secure?
Not only should U.S. men's national team fans, be worried, but if I were Jordan Pefok, I would be livid. What else do I have to do? I am literally the only forward who has not gone cold. I'm literally the guy who has been so hot, I won a goal-scoring title in Europe. The first time a U.S. men's national team player, eligible player, has won a goal-scoring title in Europe. I'm that guy. And I'm scoring goals in the Bundesliga. My team is atop of the Bundesliga, not Bayern Munich. And all of a sudden, I'm being treated like my goals don't matter? Like I'm some scrub? What are you, holding a miss in Estadio Azteca against Mexico against me? If that's the case, why not hold when I came on as a sub versus Honduras in the semifinal of the CONCACAF Nations League to win the game for me? This man has done nothing but score goals, and somehow that is being held against him.
So I feel like we've started to have this discussion of whether it's Pefok or Pepe, Herc, but I wonder if actually it's not about Pefok. I wonder if the true debate here for who that third forward is going to be is actually between Pepe and Sargent, in which case I would tell U.S. fans, don't worry so much about the possibility of Pefok being left off this team. I say that in large part, Herc, because of what Greg Berhalter told us after he made the decision, which is, look, I've seen what I need to see out of Jordan Pefok. We know his profile. And also, Herc, that we've seen everything that we need to see out of him to make the decision as to whether he's going to be on the World Cup or not. Greg Berhalter's not saying that if he's already ruled Jordan Pefok out. It's pretty clear to me that he still got him counted and that actually he's taking this opportunity to look at two other guys who haven't proven it in a while and who he needs to see if they're ready for the World Cup in Pepe and Josh Sargent. You think I'm wrong?
I just got deja vu and goosebumps. Did he not say the exact same thing about John Brooks? Did he not already know what John Brooks was about and wanted to see somebody else? How did that go for John Brooks?
It didn't go well.
Okay.
I think they're very different. I think it's very different. I think if you're Jordan Pefok and you want to worry, or if a U.S. fan and you want to worry, there is a Greg Berhalter quote that I think might make you worry quite a bit. And that's the idea that he's going out saying, look, it may not be the best forwards. It may be the guys that best fit this system. And I wonder there, Herc, what you think about that. Because that seems to imply that the system and Greg Berhalter's focus on the system is more important than production. And that's where you might get nervous, that maybe Greg Berhalter sees the system as more important than what is obvious to all of us, the thing we can see on paper, which is goals, and not just goals, Herc, but goals in a top five league.
Yeah, and he's not the only coach in the world. Luis Enrique literally had this conversation, I believe, yesterday or 2 days ago, and he was saying the same thing. He's saying, as clear as water, I call who I want because I think they will help me do what I want in said system. This is pretty much what Greg Berhalter is saying here. At some level, you have to respect it, but just say that. Just say, I want this player. I like what he does in said system. I don't care how many goals you score. But it's not been that. It's been one after the other with the inconsistencies from John Brooks to what is Jordan Pefok.
All right, so there we have it. Jordan Pefok still scoring, still not on the U.S. roster for the upcoming friendlies. We don't know about the World Cup coming up in Qatar. We got some more U.S. roster news coming in today as the team gathers for their upcoming friendlies. Multiple players in and out of the latest camp due to injury. We got Yunus Musa, who was dropped last week with a groin injury. He's replaced by Johnny Cardozo, a 20-year-old born in New Jersey, playing right now for Internacional in Brazil. Also in, Mark McKenzie and Eric Palmer Brown, the central defenders, replacing Cameron Carter-Vickers and Chris Richards. Those who are fit, they gather today in Germany for training. Among them, Brendan Aaronson and Matt Turner, who spoke to the media.
I think the message is clear, and it has been since we played those friendlies back in June. It's another opportunity for us to get out on the field against teams that are going to be playing in the World Cup, test ourselves against opponents from a different region that we don't often play against. And I think that's the big picture of this one is playing World Cup caliber teams and getting together and creating those bonds still.
And for me, I think that Greg does a great job with the intro to camps and what we want to do for the camp. But I also don't think he's going to treat it as any other camp. You know, I don't think he wants to put pressure on anything. I think that he does a really good job of we're just going to play these two games. We're going to do what we've done in all the rest of the games, and we're going to try to get the results that we want. And finally, that will transfer into going to the World Cup. So I don't think he's going to treat it as any differently.
All right, Herc, let's run it back. Hashtag USMNT style. One of the guys called in, Ricardo Pepi, with his first goal for Groningen over the weekend in a 2-1 loss to Sparta Rotterdam on Saturday.
Yeah, it's a well-taken goal as well. Listen, first appearance, it's an assist. Second appearance, it's a goal. The last club goal for Ricardo Pepi was September 30th, 2021 against Sporting Kansas City, Seb. We're talking about almost a year.
30 matches for club and country, 345 days. That's the total goal drought for Ricardo Pepi. But good news for the 19-year-old and for all U.S. fans as he finally breaks through for Groningen. Turns out Ricardo Pepi, though, not the only American to score over the weekend. No, Brian Reynolds, yes. Remember him on loan from Roma, now with Westerlo in Belgium, scoring his first goal, and it came in the first minute.
That's a good goal. That's a banger of a goal. No angle. You think he's going to slot this hard and across. He looks for it. He finds it. It's going to be tough, right? Not impossible, but tough. He's only played a couple games for the U.S. men's national team, but he'll take that goal for sure. Conference league winner.
Outside looking in for 2022, maybe 2026 though. Westerlo, by the way, won that game 3-2. Sergiño Dest made his Serie A debut for AC Milan, coming on at the half in Milan's 2-1 loss to Napoli. He did, Herc, concede a penalty.
Yeah, 5 minutes in, now what you want to do. Milan, by the way, having a rough go against Napoli, at least at home. That's a third straight loss. Try guarding that guy. Ask Joe Gomez how that went for him.
Dest, by the way, hasn't played a ton, but says he wants to make the move to Milan permanent. Of course, he is right now on loan from Barcelona. Finally, Herc, in case you missed it, Daryl DK is the strongest player in the world, at least according to the FIFA 23 video game player ratings. DK has a strength rating of 96, tied with Thomas Corey, who plays in England's third tier as the strongest players in the upcoming release. He takes over for the legend Adebayo Akinfenwa.
Yeah, U.S. men's national team fans and West Brom fans would wish he was the healthiest player in the world. Has only played one game, missed 12 this season.
As you mentioned, out long-term then with a thigh injury. One last reminder, the United States against Japan this Friday on ESPN2. It's an early start. Next to last game before Greg Berhalter has to make those final World Cup roster decisions. Plus, Football America is live right after the game on ESPN+. Don't miss a very special edition of the show.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Joining us now on Football America is none other than Juan Carlos Osorio. He is, of course, the former manager of the Mexican national team. And, Herc, we have some big show news to announce. He's also going to be the manager of our team here on Football America. That's right. Profe is going to join us in the build-up to and in Qatar for our World Cup coverage. So, Juan Carlos, bienvenido al equipo de Football America. It's great to have you.
Likewise. It is an honor to be with you, Sebastián, and with Hercules, and try to give good information in to the whole soccer world in the United States and whatever we get to. I hope that we can contribute to a good debate and hopefully a healthy debate about football and about the topics that we're going to cover today. I am very proud to be with you two and with the rest of the American U.S. football, soccer, football, and I will try to contribute the most I can.
We know you will do that. Okay, Profe, so you know the Mexican national team fan base very, very well. You know it can be pessimistic. It can at times have lots of tension, anxiety. There's a position right now, the striker position, the number nine position, that has all El Tri fans worried big time ahead of the World Cup. From a managerial standpoint, you've been in that spot. How worried are you about Mexico's striker position right now?
Well, I was reviewing what I have to say, and the first thing I would have to mention is we all have to put the things in context. And last World Cup, the final list was made up of 23 players. This time around, it's 26. So, to be honest, I wouldn't be too much worry about, because I think that at least there are three more spots to decide of who could be the next striker in this case, or who could be the next top three players that the manager wants to bring into the final list.
Okay, well, let's start with the first nine then. Raul Jimenez, the man of the moment. You've coached Raul Jimenez, Profe. Tell me what you see from Raul Jimenez right now, the current player he is, after this incident with David Luiz, and maybe what you coached. How big of a difference is there from that Raul Jimenez today from that one?
Well, I remember in Russia, I spoke to Raul a couple times. And I always highlight his attributes as a football player. And I always said to him that all he had to do was to concentrate in his football and try to compete at that time with Chicharito. At this time, it would be against anybody else. I think the Raul has a dominant aerial football, meaning headers. He's very good defensively and offensively. He can also score some wonderful goals, but he can also score, as they say, the striker's normal goals. So I think that if he can concentrate in his football in the next 2 months, I think that he could be the number one striker in the national team.
Mm. All right, what about a guy, profe, like Santiago Jimenez? He's a fan favorite right now. Scored goals for Cruz Azul, got the move over to the Dutch top flight, continues to score goals for Feyenoord. Do you think he's ready to lead the line potentially as a starter at the World Cup for Mexico, or do you think he still has more development to go before he's ready to take on that responsibility?
As you all know, the manager has to select the team on form right now, here and now. And I think he combines the two good attributes in a goal scorer, and which is probably from his father genes, and he's very strong on leading the lineup. He is a guy that can put pressure on the defenders, and he can also score good goals. So if the manager, who at the end is the one who decides everything, wants to have one striker on form, so I think he could be that striker. Hmm. The fact that he has gone to a good European league and he has adapted really well, that proves that he can play and he can be an influential player at the top level. But that again, that does that the 26th spot allows the manager to take some chances, and he could be well the player that he can decide that will take his chances on and deserve it, because he has proved that he has played at that level.
Juan Carlos, I don't think I'm crazy in saying he's probably only going to take 3-9. So if that's the case, and you have Raul and Santi, another guy who's in form is Henry Martin. Henry Martin is the in-form striker right now, but Tata Martino seems to really trust Rogelio Funes Mori. Who would you, Juan Carlos Osorio, give the edge to? Henry Martin or Funes Mori?
Well, I think that in the past, the manager of the national team has been questioned if he wants to bring in a naturalized player. And that will be the case with Rogelio Funes Mori. Now, I think that Henry Martin has proved in America that he can play at that top level, that he can score good goals. So I think that the end of the day, and that's my point, is not really what I think he should do, but it's the manager's decision. And I think that either or, he will, I think he will be a good player to add to the 20, to the list, and he could be a player. I will say that to obviously, you are asking me, and I have to make a decision. If that has to be, if that would be my decision, I will wait until the last week of the final week of the making the final list, and whoever is in better form, I will go for it.
Pro, Profe, speaking about big managerial decisions, one of the biggest ones that Tata Martino has taken so far is the decision to leave Chicharito Hernandez off the team. As somebody who has coached Chicharito, what do you think when you see him not in the World Cup squad as we head towards Qatar? And do you think that Mexico could benefit from having a player like Chicharito in the team?
I do think so. I think Javier can still score good goals. Looking at his last games, he looked 3 in 5 or 8 in 8. I will stay with the 8 and 8. And he's playing in a very competitive league. But one thing about Javier is that I do believe that he has to feel important to give his 100%. And that will be a decision that the manager, a top manager, which I have to say, I think Martino is a top manager, and he will make the final decision looking at what's the best for the team. But I think Javier, with the national team, has always given his 100%, and he can still play at that level. And if he knows as early as possible that he will be part of it, I think he will be in top form for that big tournament. And he will provide the national team, whether he starts or not, he will give his 100%, and I think that 100% will reflect on some goals, as we know that he can score at that level.
Juan Carlos Osorio, you've been in this position right now. Tata Martino having to make a decision late. Greg Berhalter's in the exact same position. Anything he does or they do will be criticized. What advice would you give either of those two heading into this final stretch?
To be honest with you, Hercules, I think that I am not the person to tell them what to do, but I do think that both managers are top managers, and in this case, Mr. Martino is a man with plenty of experience, and I think to manage and to coach a top team like Barcelona has given him the enough experience to decide what to do. I would just say it, in my humble opinion, is whoever, if they have to make a decision in 2 or 3 players, I will wait, and I will follow up the next 2 months, the competition that they play in. And whoever is in better form, that's the player that I will take for the World Cup.
I like it. Juan Carlos Osorio likes to leave the door open as long as possible for the players ahead of a World Cup window. There he is, El Profe. Thanks for being with us here on Football Americas, and we look forward to working with you more on the road to Qatar. All right, Herc, time to run it back now with El Tri. Diego Lainez with an assist for Sporting Braga. They beat Vizela 2-0 on Sunday. Lainez didn't start. He was a 71st minute sub.
That's usually how I got my assist when I was playing. Just give it to somebody else who knows what they're doing.
Braga right now second in Portugal, off to a good start with Diego Lainez in the team. They are 2 points back of your league leaders, Benfica. Speaking of Lainez, his former team playing Wednesday in the League's Cup Showcase. That's right, Club America against Nashville, also Chivas against FC Cincinnati. A nice little doubleheader for you on ESPN2. Herc, it was a weekend of big games in Liga MX. None bigger than El Clásico Nacional, America versus Chivas at the Azteca. Picked this one up early, 2 minutes in. America draws a penalty. Henry Martin kicking the box. They got it right, yeah?
Yeah, they got it right. And Henry Martin is not going to miss this one like he did his last penalty. That's 10 on the year right now. My man is hot.
10 goals, 5 assists this season for Henry Martin. America up 1-0 second half. America find a second. Alejandro Sendejas with the finishing touch.
Yeah, look at Henry use his body, though. Bring this down. Sendejas with the right foot. Megs the defender. You talk about Sendejas. That is the man.
All right, 3 minutes after America scored the play of the game. Luis Olivas, the header. Memo Ochoa, the save. Yeah, I'll say it again for you authoritatively. The save. 61st minute, Chivas get one. Alexis Vega, the set piece. Chicote Calderon, Aguilas killer.
Chicotazos. It's always him. It's always him.
In the end, though, not enough. Final score, 2-1. America, Nene Beltran sent off late for Chivas as they finished with 10 men. Also of note, my book it parlay hit. Both teams to score, plus America to win. All right, Herc. It's a common theme down in Mexico after America gets a big victory. Was this win by Las Águilas worthy of a referee-aided asterisk?
No, America won.
That's right.
But you have to put things into context. They won because VAR was correctly applied here. And that's not been the case in Liga MX for quite some time. If the referee would have called goal, there is no evidence to overturn that it wasn't a goal. You have one take, one toma, one image where you're just like, that's not in. I can see the post. But then you have a completely different image, this one right here, where you're like, how is this not a goal? So because the first call was no goal, there is no clear and obvious proof to overturn that call. You have to stay with it. But it's one of those calls. Here we are, 2-3 days later, and we are still arguing about it. If it gets called a goal, I have zero issue with it because you cannot overturn it. That is what VAR is for. There is no legal proof to overturn it with the letter of the law. So correctly applied here, it is no goal. Chivas, though, I thought they played well, and I thought at times they actually got America, that defensive line, very nervous. We'll still go home empty-handed.
All right, no way there should be an asterisk by this victory for America. It's the same cheap discourse we always see when a big club wins. You don't just see it in Mexico. You see it all over the world as well. Anybody who watched this game as well will know that probably the best player on the field, at least for Chivas, at least in the first half, was Juancho Jimenez, their goalie. America definitely deserved the 3 points in this game. They were by far the better team, Herc. I wonder, though, if we think about this, like, why isn't there goal line technology in Liga MX? This is not a third-rate league, right? Liga MX wants to be considered top dog, at least in this hemisphere, in this part of the world. Shouldn't it have goal line technology? And if so, shouldn't a team like Chivas, which is in theory one of the biggest brands in Mexican football, be leading the charge instead of complaining after a game like this?
Yeah, I don't think they're complaining. I think it's the fans who complain that they have every right to complain. Let me ask you a question. I agree with goal line technology. If it's a first-rate league that you presume to be in top clubs like America and Chivas, you would want said technology to aid in correcting a decision. If this gets called as a goal, do you think there's enough evidence to overturn it?
No, I think the point that you made is correct. I think there's more evidence that suggests it wasn't a goal. I think there's one very clear freeze frame where if you stop it from the upper angle, it might look like a goal. I think there's much more evidence that suggests it wasn't a goal and that was another great save by Memo Ochoa. By the way, we've seen him do that a lot, especially in big games. Let's hope he can carry it over to the Mexican national team as well. All right, let's stop talking about Chivas on-field drama, because there certainly was some there. Let's focus now on their off-field drama. Because there's plenty of it right now coming off of this game in the Mexican press. Amaury Vergara, Chivas owner, apparently not at the Clásico Nacional Saturday night in Mexico City. Why? Because he was in Las Vegas hanging out with Hercules Gomez, Mauricio Pedrosa, everybody else at the Canelo Gennady Golovkin boxing fight. Vergara getting hammered by Chivas fans online as well as the press down in Mexico. Herc, are you cool with Vergara skipping out on the biggest game to watch the big fight?
Yeah, I'm cool with it. What's the owner of a team going to do? Cheer louder so they can try scoring more? What's he gonna yell? Hey, defend that guy so they're better at defense? Listen, he's the owner of the team. Bring out the checkbook, okay? Do what you need to do. And in the transfer windows, in one transfer window, he spent over $40 million internally to try to bring in players, overpriced players. He brought in Ricardo Peláez, the hottest directivo, sporting director in Liga MX, to right the ship. There's only so much he can do. If he's there or not, it's not going to change anything for Chivas. I mean, this is the owner of a team. It's not the center back. It's not the starting forward.
Okay.
It's not anything like that. It's ridiculous. And I understand. It's a terrible look. You know what's a terrible look? Chivas in the last 8-9 years. This season, decent.
Okay, let me ask you this from the players' perspective, because you were pretty upset when we saw those Chivas players have to march out and do that press conference mea culpa. And I think we both agreed we felt like that had come, or at least the idea for that had come from somewhere on high. That was not something that was born of the dressing room, born of the players. If you're one of those players who, after a loss like that, had to go out and do this kind of ridiculous, embarrassing mea culpa, and then in your biggest game, not just your biggest game, the biggest game in Mexican soccer, the owner, the guy who's probably the one pushing for you to do that mea culpa, is in Las Vegas watching a fight, that's not going to tick you off a little bit as a player.
You're going to play harder because he's there?
No, I'm not going to play harder because he's there. But the next time they come to me and they ask me to march out there and give a pathetic post-game apology, I'm not going to be very happy about it. And
oh,
I'm going to remember this. I'm
going to
remember this.
Mauri Vergara is going to be very, very distraught that you're not going to be very happy about it.
Another embarrassment, Herc. Another embarrassment for Chivas. And I say this as somebody with, how do I put this? Americanista tendencies here on Football America. I wish Amaury Vergara would sell the team. I wish that Chivas would be great, because I think that's what's good for Mexican soccer. You mentioned the 40 million. In the past, we've questioned whether Vergara had the resources. I think when he goes to a fight instead of the big game, now you can also question his commitment.
No.
So as somebody who wants the best for Mexican soccer, I want a better owner for Chivas.
Seb, you want the owner
you think
of every
he's the
team.
Right owner for,
you
think
want he's the owner of every team at every game. Okay, that's what you want.
No, I want the owner of the second biggest club in Mexico at the biggest game in Mexico to be there, especially when the team is struggling
If he sells a team, nothing is going to change, because the new owner is going to come in, and what are you going to tell the new owner to do? Go out and get a good sporting director. Go out and get somebody to right the ship. So he goes out and gets the best sporting director in the market. Go out and get the best available players. So that sporting director gets the best available players. Go out and get the best coach available to you right now. It's all been done. Their problems rung much deeper than the owner.
Deeper than the owner. There you have it. Hercules Gomez defending Amaury Vergara here on Football Americas. Elsewhere, Herc, in Liga MX, we had another big game in Mexico City on Sunday. Cruz Azul visiting Pumas, who needed points badly to have a shot at the playoffs. Unfortunately for them, it was Cruz Azul scoring first in the 26th minute. Rodrigo Huescas.
Yeah, this is bad defending there. I mean, Huescas over three players. Look at that. Gets inside of his defender. Julio Gonzalez can't do anything about it. Off the crossbar and in.
Cruz Azul up 1-0. They make it 2 just before the half. Gonzalo Carneiro.
Who do you want to blame here? Near post,
the owner.
Danny Alves.
I want to blame the owner.
You would. Dineno, Julio Gonzalez coming out there, not holding on to that ball. I mean, where do we start?
Pumas get one back in the 65th. Danny Alves, nice touch over the top. Diogo, the rebound.
Yeah, Cata Dominguez maybe a little at fault here. It's unlucky, but Macias Corona was massive the whole second half. Unlucky there.
And so there you have it. Cruz Azul victory, the final score 2-1. All right, as we think about Pumas, Herc, we know that it was a marriage of convenience between Pumas and the Brazilian star Danny Alves. As we now look back on that marriage, who do you think was a bigger loser? Is it the club or is it the player?
You know, bigger loser, the club or the player, I'm going to say it's the player. Now, bear with me of where I'm going to go with this, okay? We knew it was a bad idea. You don't spend $3.5 million a year, okay? That's what you're going to pay him in a salary for Danny Alves, a 39-year-old player, to come into a team that has historically been young players, dynamic players, all work, that type of environment. And Lilini's team, who's literally everybody has to work for the system, for the team to be constructive. But if I'm Danny Alves, and I'm 39 years old, and I'm thinking about a World Cup, I'm thinking, Pumas has just cost me my chance at a World Cup. And not only that, Dani Alves, who has the record for the most titles in the world, okay? 17 straight years of earning a title. Since 2005, he's won a title, at least one. every single year. That's 47 titles. All of a sudden, it's going to end in Mexico, in Liga MX, with Pumas? With Pumas? Seriously? They could really cost me that streak. They could really cost me a World Cup spot because nothing's guaranteed under TJ. Nothing's guaranteed under this Brazil, who are one of the favorites in Qatar. If I'm Dani Alves, I don't care how much money they're paying me. I feel like a big loser with Pumas.
Yep. He was called up in June to the Brazilian national team. He joins Pumas in July. And then for their latest roster call-up, he's left out. So you just do the math there. You follow the timeline and you say, okay, yeah, the move to Liga MX may very well have cost Dani Alves this shot. For those of you who watch ESPN FC, they had a Brazilian journalist on today. They were talking about the right back position. The one line he gave about Dani Alves is he went to Mexico and he's playing poorly. So that's what they think in Brazil of what Dani Alves has been playing here. He's also been playing out of position, at least from a Brazilian national team perspective. So I think it's very much hurt him there. And I have Pumas has definitely gotten worse with Dani Alves.
Yes.
But I have no problem, Herc, with the attempt. It's a home run swing. When you take a home run swing, there's a chance you whiff. But how many times on this show have we said Pumas is bordering on irrelevant? Of Los Grandes, they're the team that we talk about the least. Going out and getting a player like Dani Alves, even if it was $3.5 million a year, which is a lot for Pumas, still says something about their place in Mexican soccer and the world game. I don't have a problem for it from a Pumas perspective in that regard. I thought it was ambitious. And I think if you're a fan of Pumas, that's what you'd want to see, right?
Well, he's not the only player they took an ambitious swing at. They actually spent money in this offseason, and I think that's what makes it even worse. For the first time in a long time, they tried to be relevant, and they've not gotten anywhere. And you mentioned the position that Dani Alves plays. He's a right back, but he started off as a defensive midfielder. Then he started off as an eight. And so recently, we've seen him play behind the striker, behind the nine position, almost in that creative role. But he's played 92% of the minutes. He's 39 years old, playing in altitude, playing in smog, playing in these crazy conditions with this crazy travel, and it's not been conducive to him or the club. And that being said, he leads Pumas in assists with 4.
Yeah. He may also not be out of the World Cup picture entirely. I was looking at the Brazil roster. Danilo is the only, like, true right back that they
Fabinho
have in the list of defenders.
Fabinho has played right back as well, yeah.
But you know, he could still have very much a shot at making the team for the upcoming World Cup. Pumas, by the way, right now 16th, Herc, out of 18 teams in the Mexican table. 3 games left. So Andres Lilini's squad still alive, but they got a lot of work to do. Atlas, meanwhile, they've been eliminated. There will be no three-peat. They lost to Rayados, who are just 1 point back of America at the top of Liga MX. All right, time for some Major League Soccer. As always, we bring it to you in the form of the good, the bad, and the ugly. The good, an MVP frontrunner showdown on Saturday in Austin as Austin FC's Sebastian Driussi and Nashville's Hany Mukhtar went toe-to-toe. Mukhtar scored first via penalty, his 23rd goal of the season. 5 minutes later, Driussi leveled the match at 1-1, his 21st goal of the season. The game finished in a 1-1 draw between these two top four teams in the Western Conference. Herc, just a few games left, so who are you giving the MLS MVP nod to between Driussi and Mukhtar, or are you going with someone off the board?
This is a tough one, right? Because if you look what Sebastian Driussi has done with this team right now in Austin, it is crazy. The turnaround is insane. I believe they were like second to last in the West last year to now, I mean, pretty much chasing LAFC for that final or a top spot in the West. It's a crazy turnaround. But I think about Sebastian Driussi and where Austin would be with them, they would probably still be a very good team, especially playing in that place. But this Nashville team, without, what is it, 23 goals, 11 assists of Hany Mukhtar, where would they be? Their second leading goal scorer has like 5 goals. He is the offense for Nashville. He is the complete package for Nashville, which is an crazy, or say, insane amount of business when you think about it, crazy amount of business, where they purchased him from like $3 million from Brøndby, from Denmark, and he comes in, and look at these numbers. In about 2.5 years, okay, 77 games, 43 goals, 27 assists. He's not only MVP for this year, he's one of the best pieces of business, one of the most important transfers or best transfers in Major League Soccer history. It's not only this year, but he's clearly, in my eyes, the front runner for Major League Soccer's MVP. He's got 14 goals in the last 15 appearances. It's something crazy for Nashville. He's my front runner.
Yeah, if you go off stats, I think you got to give it to Mukhtar, right? He's got 34 goal involvements compared to just 28 for Driussi. But if you go beyond the stats, I might go with Driussi, and this is the argument that I would make. One, Austin's a better team. I think Driussi gets a lot of credit for that as their best player. Austin's a much better team right now than Nashville in terms of the Western Conference table. I think the other thing that's important to note here is Austin is 2 years into their build. Nashville is 3 years into their build. So Nashville, in theory, has had another year to put a team around a guy like Hany Mukhtar.
2020 build. Remember that.
Okay, sure, you want to put an asterisk in there. That's fine. Your expansion year was 2020. Obviously, difficult to build a team. But still, I think Nashville had much higher expectations than Austin, for me anyway, coming into this season. Austin was 12th in the Western Conference last year. The one thing I'll agree with you on here is kind of what you talked about with the profile of the signings. These are two very interesting profile players. They both spent time in Europe. Obviously, Mukhtar started in Europe. Driussi went to Europe. And then come to Major League Soccer. I mean, Driussi's 26, Mukhtar's 27. So right in their mid-20s, it's a far cry, Herc, from, say, 6 years ago, what, when David Villa was winning MVP? Like, it's a totally different profile.
For sure.
It says a lot about what MLS is looking for as they go out and make these signings.
Absolutely, and they're knocking out the park when you think they spent $3 million. It's just good scouting. It's good. It's a good investment right there. It's a great return, and it's a player you could build a franchise around for years to come.
Hany Mukhtar, Sebastián Driussi, no doubt two of the good in Major League Soccer. What about the bad, Herc? What about the bad? We had three teams eliminated from playoff contention this past weekend. Sporting Kansas City, Chicago, and Toronto FC. TFC eliminated after a 4-0 defeat to Orlando on Saturday. Also eliminated after a huge summer transfer window that saw them bring in, among others, Italian internationals Lorenzo Insigne and Federico Bernardeschi. Herc, no playoffs for Toronto FC in Bob Bradley's first season. Do we consider it a failure in Toronto?
No, I'm not ready to consider it a failure in Toronto because you knew that it was going to be up to the second half of the season. The Italians, the reinforcers were going to come late. And listen, it's four losses in the final nine games, that final stretch, right? But if you look at it, it was only one loss in six, and then it just went off the rails, starting with Montreal and the other three in a row. So this is a team that was banking on the second half. It just was too little too late. But if you look at reinforcements, Bernardeschi, in 11 games, he ended up scoring something like eight goals, four assists. Insigne, six goals. I mean, he was one goal behind Jimenez and Osorio, who were the team leaders in that category. Marc-Anthony Kay gets injured. Richie Larea comes back. It was just too little too late. But this is a team that I think is going to be turning some heads next season. This is a team that can get better defensively and is going to be a contender in the East. But it was just asking way too much of them to bank on the second half or the final stretch, if you will, of the season.
I'm glad you mentioned Marc-Anthony Kay and Richie Larea, right? Because it wasn't just the two Italians that came in. There's a lot of changes, a lot of upheaval that this Toronto FC team has gone through over the course of this season. I don't know if it reminded you at all of the end of the regular season last year with LAFC. Remember, they needed some points at the end and end up shipping five. I think it was against Colorado to get eliminated from postseason contention. And it kind of happened here, although it didn't just happen against Orlando. It was, as you say, the last few games. They've shipped four goals in each of their last three games, which were effectively, as we see now, they're eliminated, must wins for postseason contention. That's not something that I think Bob Bradley's going to feel very good about, that this team was that loose in these big games down the stretch. That cannot sit well with a coach like Bradley.
No, absolutely not. But if you look at one of them, it was against their rivals, against Montreal, a game that, mind you, you were winning. And to have it turned around in your home field in front of your fans, it's not a good feeling. And Atlanta, a team that you think on paper you definitely have a good chance against, puts four against you. And then Orlando is a team that's very difficult, Open Cup champions and whatnot, but you certainly do not expect in three games to give up 12 goals.
Right. Real quick here, because obviously you're right off this season, the guys come in late. Next season, playoffs are bust for Bradley and TFC,
absolutely,
right? No excuses.
You could put an asterisk on this season if you want, but there's really no excuse this season. I just wouldn't consider it a failure.
All right. Let's get to the ugly then. It features my beloved DC United, not for their latest defeat, unfortunately. They lost 3-2 to Inter Miami over the weekend. The result, not the focus here. Instead, it's the incident between Damian Lowe and Taxi Fontas, in which Fontas is alleged to have racially abused the Jamaican international. Fontas subbed out of the match shortly after the incident, and on TV you could see both managers as well as some Inter Miami players coming together to discuss what had occurred. For more, let's hear from someone who was there. Phil Neville, the Inter Miami manager, had this to say after the match.
I think there's no place at all for racism on a football field, in society. I've just been speaking to the owners, all three owners, and they 100% agree that there's no way in the world that any form of racism should be happening on a football field. And I must commend my players for keeping their calm. I must commend the referee for a really, really, really difficult situation. He followed the protocol set out by the MLS. And I must give massive, massive respect to Wayne Rooney for dealing with it in the way that he did.
Those are the words of Phil Neville. How about this from DeAndre Yedlin via Pablo Maurer at MLSist on Twitter? Yedlin saying Damian and another player got into a scuffle. As Damian walks away, one of their guys call him the N-word. Pretty clear what DeAndre Yedlin heard. As for Taxi Fontas, he gave a statement on social media effectively denying, and not just denying, I think you can say vehemently denying the allegations there, says he is falsely accused. All right, Herc, it's another sad chapter where we see soccer and racism coming together. What's your reaction from what we saw in this game between DC United and Inter Miami?
It's sad on so many levels, especially this week. And racism's always sad. Alleged racism, I should say. We should do due process here with Taxi Fontas and let the information come to light. But it's disappointing because in a weekend where at least the world's attention was on Vinicius Jr. If he scores, will he dance? And the underlying racism in La Liga and in Spain and how that was coming to a head. This happens in your bubble, our bubble here, mm-hmm. on our neck of the woods, our sector, to remind you that this is still very prevalent in the world. It's sad because you never want to see this happen. But it's also a reminder that things haven't changed. Not too long ago, it was a Damitrari. Diamante, LAFC forward, who accused a Portland Timbers player of mm-hmm. racism. What came about that? An investigation and nothing else. And then it was a Portland Timbers player, Diego Chara, who accused Fragapan of Minnesota of the exact same thing. And what came about that? It was an investigation and nothing else. So here we are again. Another investigation. And now you have players that a lot of people would vouch for. Andre Yedlin, a U.S. men's national team veteran, saying he heard something, saying it's now up to the league, and how they will respond will be very telling. Here we are again. Another investigation. What will come upon this? Because we keep hearing from the league, zero tolerance when it comes to this type of an event. Well, this is now the third time that I can recall in the last few seasons mm-hmm. where there's been this type of event. Will it just get swept under the rug? Will there be nothing was found type of notification or press release? Something needs to come of this because it can't just be zero tolerance until people stop paying attention.
So you mentioned, Herc, the MLS investigations, and specifically the case with Diego Chara and Fragapane of Minnesota United last year. MLS did an investigation, and in that investigation, they couldn't corroborate what was allegedly said. So that's why you get no suspension, you get no punishment. Here, at least based on what we heard from Phil Neville and DeAndre Yedlin, just those two guys alone, and I think it's also important to point out what we're not hearing from DC United. If you saw the post-game reaction from Wayne Rooney, it was like, there will be an investigation. I can't say anything more. We've not heard any DC United players coming out to defend Taxi. We've not heard the club really do anything other than a few hours ago releasing a two-sentence statement where they say they'll cooperate with the league. I don't think this is going to end very well for Taxi Fontas. Of course, there needs to be an investigation. But, Herc, if all they're looking to do in those investigations is corroborate what was said, it's pretty clear there are two people, at least two people, already willing to corroborate it, I think there's a big suspension coming. The other thing that I took out of this was how it was handled in game. It wasn't the referees, right? Ismail Elfath is the center ref in this game. He says neither he or anybody else on his team heard anything. It's not like a league official that stops the game and makes sure Funtas is subbed off. It was self-policed here. It was the Inter-Miami players, as you mentioned, DeAndre Yedlin stepping up, and it was clearly Phil Neville and Wayne Rooney coming to some understanding. The players were the ones, Herc, that took care of this in live time, in real time.
I mean, I congratulate the players, but it's sad that the players have to police themselves and these type of aspects. And I'm not saying the referees have to be on top of everything. They have to hear everything on the field. They're going to miss things like this. But if it's really zero tolerance and you already have multiple people claiming they heard this racial slur, well, we need to see it because everybody is watching. What the league does now will set precedent.
Yep. So I'm sure we will be hearing more from Major League Soccer on this story involving DC United and Inter Miami. More news from the weekend, Herc. In case you missed it, the LA Galaxy had themselves a day. 4-1 winners over Colorado. I don't know why I just said Colorado like that. I was about to say Chicharito because he scored his 15th of the season. But how about Ricky Puig? 3 assists. The first Galaxy player to get 3 assists in the same game since some guy named Landon Donovan back in 2014.
You'd have to be a big idiot, a real idiot, to think Ricky Puig couldn't come into Major League Soccer and do well. Like, who would think like that?
I questioned his motivation.
I never said you.
Okay. Well, when you say idiot on this show, I just leap into self-defense mode.
You did get self-defensive right there. Listen, he's a good player. He's very young. He's coming from one of the best setups in the world. Give an opportunity. His problems have never been talent. Right. It's between the ears, right? It's him going crazy in the locker room. That's not been the case. He's clearly enjoying his football. And guess what? The LA Galaxy is in position.
Absolutely. Here's a look at the top of the West and the East. LAFC won, so they're now tied with Philadelphia in the Supporter Shield race. Also out West, Austin and Dallas have clinched. In the East, Philly, Montreal, and the New York Red Bulls are your three teams that have locked down postseason spots. Then we got more Major League Soccer on television this weekend. It's Portland against LAFC. Sunday, actually a couple weekends from now. Sunday, October 2nd, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on ABC and ESPN Deportes. National Women's Soccer League over the weekend, Herc. What a game, what an atmosphere. The San Diego Wave crushing the NWSL attendance record. 32,000, that's right, 32K in attendance at Snapdragon Stadium for their first game in their new home. Jaden Shaw, the youngster, with a goal scorer. And then how about this? The huge save on the penalty as San Diego preserves the 1-0 win in their first game in their brand new digs and in front of a record crowd. All right, so San Diego getting the better of Angel City on the weekend, but it's been a battle of expansion teams, Herc, so far in the 2022 NWSL season. Who do you think has had a better first year? Is it San Diego or is it Angel City?
Well, let me clarify. The field, it's obviously San Diego. They're okay. Leading the league. But bear with me to where I'm going to take this. LAFC is changing the game right now in NWSL. It's very good. 32,000 is an insane number. Mm-hmm. Anywhere in the world, it really is in today's football market, football atmosphere. And for the San Diego Wave to get this is truly something special. But I'm talking about changing the game, okay? I'm talking about Angel City right now. Before they came into NWSL, they were giving out franchises for $2, $3 million. And you get your franchise, okay? They just did an evaluation on Angel City FC that's $100 million. They got $45 million in sponsorship commitments. They're doing well in NWSL, and they're doing this, mind you, without their best player, Kristen Press. They're completely changing what is the complexion of NWSL and how people view franchises and the potential investment for years to come. 32,000 in one game? That is great, but to sell out continuously, to have upwards of 19,000 for the last 8 games you've played in at home, that is something special. They are changing the game right now in NWSL.
All right, so you're giving it consistency over the one-time big number of San Diego way. That's fair enough. I think we have to see what San Diego does in Game 2, Game 3, so on and so forth. Maybe what they even do next season at Snapdragon, because if you can continue to draw 32,000, that's pretty impressive, right? You talk about changing the game. You could say the Portland Thorns for a while were the leaders in attendance in NWSL because they had the biggest stadium with the biggest capacity and the most capacity to fill that stadium. San Diego is going to change that game now. They're going to change that calculus. But I'm with you. I think Angel City, if we're talking off the field, has done a lot of good beyond just, you know, the tickets sold, the merchandising, the gear. Has San Diego sent us gear yet?
Still waiting.
And there you go. The true decisive factor in which team has had the better expansion year. Which team got around to sending us gear first here on Football Americas. I think it was Angel City FC. Good shout as well to acknowledge that they've done all that they've done without Christian Press. But shout out to the star for San Diego as well. They've had a great, great expansion season, and a lot of that is because they bet on the right player to build their team around. Yeah. That was Alex Morgan. A lot of people might have said, oh, does she still have it in her? Is she still going to be hungry? No. They bet on Alex Morgan, and it has paid off extremely well for San Diego, who right now are the top team in the NWSL table. And for that, as an expansion squad, they certainly deserve a lot of credit. Let's check in on what else happened around NWSL over the weekend. This is an epic goal or epic fail. It involves Megan Rapinoe of OL Reign against North Carolina Courage. The free kick from distance, Herc.
No. You can't get scored on from there. This bounces at least three times. It's from way deep. You can't catch a keeper. Megan, she's been killing it, but that's an epic foul.
Wow, okay. Casey Murphy, the goalie who goes in the books there with our epic fail. Here's a look at the top of the table in the NWSL. As we mentioned, the top six go through to the postseason right now. San Diego enjoying a one-point lead in the standings over Houston and Kansas City. All right, parting shot here. Have you heard? It appears that elements in both Europe and the United States have an interest in potentially playing the Champions League final. Yes, the Champions League final here in the U.S. Herc, what do you think?
Oh, Boley, you're at it again. New Chelsea right. Owner. It wasn't him? It wasn't him? I still hate it.
Really?
Yeah.
You know the show is called Football Americas. Don't we want the biggest, best games here?
Why are you the way you are?
Content, mostly.
To what end? Like, I get the American market is what everybody wants to go for. I get there are dollar signs behind this. But why take one of the best games in the world and one of the best competitions in the world and ruin it? Take it from what makes it great. And put it in the U.S. just because you think it's marketing dollars behind it, because you want the eyeballs behind it. There is no need for this. Our production crew jokingly said that would be like taking the Super Bowl and putting it in London, putting it in Germany, taking the World Series and taking it to Paraguay. There is no need for these things. Some things are good the way they are. There is no need to try to alter them. This isn't one of those things where it's gonna make, like Todd Boehly's idea, it's gonna make it better. It's gonna help the lower divisions, fund the lower divisions in the pyramid in England. It's not what it's about. This is just straight greed.
Yeah. I've never been to a Champions League final. I've never been to a Super Bowl either, but you always hear about a Super Bowl that it's not like a real proper atmosphere. It's not a real NFL atmosphere. It's very corporate. I would assume that if you move the Champions League final to the United States, you would get something similar. Of course, you would get fans of the two teams that made the final, but you'd also get a very corporate feel. And I think, obviously, Herc, as much as, like, as an American broadcaster, we want to see this here, we have to think of the fans. We think of our own fans all the time. What about the fans in Europe? These are actually their teams, and you're going to ask them now for the biggest game of the season to go all the way across the Atlantic. That doesn't sound very fan-friendly, at least to me. All right, that'll do it for this edition of Football Americas. He's Hercules Gomez. I'm Sebastian Salazar. By the way, we will not be back here in our usual time slot on Thursday night. No, instead, we will be up bright and early on Friday morning for immediate post-game coverage and reaction as the U.S. faces off against Japan. It's a game you can see on both ESPN Plus and ESPN2. So again, Football Americas back with you Friday morning after the United States and Japan.
It's really early, Seb.
It is really early. It is really early. Have some coffee. I'll have my Diet Mountain Dew, and we'll be up bright and early ahead of the United States' penultimate match before the World Cup.